Welcome, everyone, to Canine Top Tales, a podcast to showcase and honor the lives of canine warriors, crime fighters, protectors, and rescuers, as told by their law enforcement, military, and search and rescue handlers and partners. I am your host, Sonia Nordstrom, a retired special agent of the FBI and a 26-year handler and trainer of search and rescue recovery canines, coming to you from the Heimdaller Canine Ranch in the beautiful mountains of Utah. We are just 6 days past the very tragic collapse of the condominium in Surfside, Florida. At this point, there are still well over 100 people still unaccounted for. Because of that, I called on a longtime search and rescue canine colleague and friend, who is also one of the original FEMA disaster canine handlers, to not only tell of her experiences while working large-scale disaster sites, such as the Oklahoma City bombing, 9/11 World Trade Center, Hurricane Katrina, and other disaster sites, but also to share her knowledge and insights regarding the work of FEMA disaster response canine teams and the requirements to become a certified and deployable FEMA canine team. So please welcome one of the most knowledgeable and experienced disaster search and rescue canine handlers and trainers, Deresa Teller. Deresa, thank you so much for joining me on Canine Top Tales. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Sonia.
So I wonder if you could start by telling people how you got involved in the dog work and whether it was your profession that drove you or whether it was a hobby that drove you and then the two merged.
Well, a little bit, probably more of a passion, I would say. I've always loved working with dogs. I used to train guide dogs a little bit with International Guiding Eyes. That's what it was called back then. Now it's Guide Dogs for the Blind. And I used to do Schutzhund many years ago. And then when I joined the fire department, I had to give up the Schutzhund because I had to study. You know, I had to dedicate my my time to that. So,
that was
July 1979. I was hired on to be trained as a paramedic. And that's what I did my whole career for 35 years on the LAFD. Although I also, Los Angeles City Fire Department.
Yeah.
Although I also, during the last 8 years, I promoted to fire inspector, and I was inspector of high-rise buildings. And even though inspecting was a lot easier, my heart was always, and as a medic, I just loved working with people. And so I loved working with dogs. And then in 1985, I saw the Mexico City earthquake. I'm watching these dogs looking for people. And I said, oh, that's what I need to get involved in. It's just what, what I love to do, help people and train dogs. So I searched out the group, and it was CARDA, California Rescue Dog Association, that I joined. And there weren't a lot of people in it at that time. At that time, they required that your dog be wilderness certified first. And my first search dog that I had was a Belgian sheepdog named Niska that I did get first as a pet. And I know there's a lot of times between the people who come for a pet dog and want to do search and rescue, and then the real dog that wants to do search and rescue, or I shouldn't say a real dog, a dog that has a lot more drive. Niska did pretty good. I worked with her about 6 months, and to me, I think that is a good time between 4 and 6 months, if you work with your dog enough, that you should know if it has the desire and heart to be a good search dog. And if it does not, it's time to move on. And you either find that dog a nice home or you whatever, but you get another dog. And she was coming to the point where I was actually going to be giving her to my grandmother. And she all of a sudden said, hey, I know what I'm supposed to be doing here. So she ended up being a nice little wilderness search dog. She would be able to do FEMA with the disaster because she wasn't as independent as you need for a FEMA dog. And I, at that time, we were also allowed to train some dogs for HRD, human remains detection. But when she smelled that stuff, she said, I am not doing that, Mom. I'm sorry. I love you, but I do not want to do that. So when Niska, and Niska did many searches, she actually found a couple kids that walked away from home up in, I think, the Acton area. It was one of the shortest searches I've ever been on. I think it was a whole total of maybe 10 minutes. But anyhow, I still put that down as one of her finds. And I've always loved when a dog is getting towards his retirement, that you start with another dog, because I don't want to be without a dog for the time it takes to train one for 1 or 2 years. So Niska was getting to be about 8. And then I got a little border collie named Bella. Bella was a great dog. She, of course, it was still being with Carta. I needed to first train her for wilderness, live fine wilderness, which she's certified in. And then she's certified as a FEMA dog for live find. And then we did HRD with her, which she's certified for both live, with both wilderness and FEMA. And she also was a water certified dog. So she was a pretty rare dog that has had many certifications.
What year was it that you started Bella in FEMA?
Probably 92, I think, is when I got her. And within, she was certified 2 months. She got certified in FEMA 2 months prior to the Oklahoma City bombing. I remember passing that test, and it may have even been within a month. I couldn't believe it that we got certified and then we're out the door on a deployment.
So can you describe the difference in the certification requirements for a FEMA dog versus a wilderness search dog? Other than, because I think people know what FEMA is, but they don't necessarily know what the requirements are.
The live fine wilderness dog pretty much goes after any live human scent that's out there. You're hiking out somewhere and you're just going to find live human scent. So it's not incorrect for your dog to actually alert on maybe just someone walking by, because they're looking for any live human scent out there. But when we would practice, we would almost always have it that the person was hiding under a tree or something like that, because most of the time when someone is lost in the wilderness and they're not and they're unaccounted for, they are most likely has maybe some type of medical or trauma condition. So that's why the person is unable to walk out of the area that they're lost at.
Just in general terms, the FEMA dog is deploying to disasters.
Yes, the FEMA dog is deploying to disasters. And although there, and every FEMA dog that I have had, as long as you work with them in the wilderness, I've cross-trained them to work in the wilderness too.
Right. Although they would have to deconflict the fact that they do have to find people who are exposed, not just those that are hidden.
That's correct. And you just sort of shape the behavior, because so we partially maybe cover up somebody in the wilderness area, wilderness training, we would partially cover up somebody. And they would say, oh, okay, we're finding someone who's partially covered also. And then you take it, you completely uncover the person. But the person is always like not moving, or pretend they're unconscious or something like that in the wilderness situation when you train with the FEMA dogs.
Yeah. And of course, the dog would understand the context as well. So once they understand that they can find people in both settings, but I'm sure, I know most disaster dogs I know, they see rubble, they know that's what they're there for.
And there's a lot more steps in training a FEMA dog than the wilderness dog. Fundamental skills assessment. And they have to show obedience off leash. They have to show that they are not aggressive towards either people or other dogs. They do direction control. If you imagine a baseball field and you're and these and the bases are all 75 feet apart, and you're staying at the home base, and you have to be able to direct your dog in a straight go out, over to the right, over to the left. And then when you're back at the home base, excuse me, pitcher base, you have to direct them straight out, keep going way back to second, and then back to home base. And this reflects to when you're on a rubble pile, because a lot of times the people are not allowed to go on certain spots of the rubble pile because of the fear of collapse. And the dogs as a whole weigh less than most of the people. And so we could direct our dog different directions to go find the lost people.
And of course, the agility is a big factor. Yeah,
the agility, there are six things that the dog will be tested on, but four that they have to pass. The four fundamentals that they have to pass is climbing a ladder, walking a plank, usually about six feet high.
Yeah.
Yes, off the ground, and anywhere from about 5 to 8 inches wide. And then they have to be able to walk some type of unstable surface. So if you just would take a platform and throw a lot of different weird things on there, some bricks and some pieces of wood and maybe an old wooden gate or an old chain link gate, and this thing wobbles, and the dog has to be able to walk across that, because the natural tendency for a dog would be jump off it because it's an unstable surface. But the dog has to be able to be in a calm way and go across this and then jump off at the end of the area. Dog maybe has a teeter-totter. Again, that's sort of an unstable surface. The dog goes up and the teeter-totter comes down and it walks off. It's very different from the agility dog. The agility dog, the timing is so quick. You want to do as fast as you can. This agility is of essence that you would, it's completely under control. And so another one of the required elements is it's a tube that's at a 45 degree angle, and they have to go in through one end and out the other without turning around and coming back. But and it's usually a little bit darkened at the end. So and the dog has to, that's another one of the fundamentals. Another one is maybe a crawl. The dog, you have a piece of plywood up on a maybe 8 to 12 inch blocks, depending upon the size of the dog. The dog has to crawl underneath that. And they're allowed to fail one of the added on choices. They must pass the four that are required. And then we have a 5-minute down stay with a handler out of sight, that the dogs have to stay where they're told. And then there's an emergency stop. The dog is about a couple hundred feet from you, and you call the dog to come to you, and you have to stop them somewhere where the evaluators ask you to stop the dog, and they have to stop. It doesn't matter if they stand, sit, lie down, twirl around, as long as they stop. And then if they've passed those elements, then you go to the search part of the pile. It'll be one pile anywhere from about 7 to 10,000 square feet, and there will be two people hidden in the pile. And then they have to find the two people within, I think it's 10 minutes. And so that, if you pass those, your dog has passed the FSA. And then you have to take the certification evaluation. And those are two piles now. It used to be three piles a long time ago. Now it's just two piles. And one is a limited access, and the other one is a full access. The limited access usually is a little more challenging, because the dog has to be able to go up and out of sight of the handler in order to find the first victim. And once he's found the first victim, you will say, the dog has to bark three times for the handler to get up on the pile. After the dog has barked three times, the handler will say, my dog has found someone, or whatever they want to say. And then they're allowed to come up on the pile and stand there with the dog. And they need to tell the evaluators where the dog is alerting at the live human scent source. Then once the dog has found that person and you, and we reward the dog with the toy. Now we have to stay within about a 5 feet circumference of that victim that's hidden in the rubble. And then we send them on the way to find more victims. But you are not allowed to leave your spot until your dog has found another victim. And then you'll say, hey, my dog has another victim. You're allowed then to go to that victim and continue on that way. That is a limited access pile. And then you have the complete access pile, and you're just allowed to go on and start wherever you want to start, and you'll look for your victims. There'll be anywhere up to 7 victims on the pile. So sometimes you'll maybe have 2 on one pile and 3 on the other, maybe 1 on one pile and 4 on the other. The only thing you always know, though, on the limited access pile, there will always be at least 1 victim, because that pile shows you that the dog works independently from the handler.
So basically that whole process, I mean, typically you're starting with a young dog, 18 months to 2 years, would you say is a fair estimate?
But to get certified, usually the dog's at least 18 months to 2 years because of maturity of the dog.
That's what I was getting at is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Process, especially when you start with a puppy. If you started with something a little older, if it was the right dog, I'm sure you could cut some of that off because the maturity is already there. But,
yes. I have myself personally have found that it's better to have a dog that's usually 6 to 8 months to start with. I've had at least 3 dogs, if not 4, a couple of mine that have been the dogs that I bred and some that I just got from somebody that, I'll go back with the puppies. They didn't have the heart.
Yep.
They just didn't have the heart. And they'll certainly let you know sometime that, I'm doing this, Mom, for you, but man, I really don't like this.
Yeah. Well, I started 3 of mine at 7 months. And at 7 months, right, you sort of know what you have in terms of physical ability.
Right.
You know what you have in terms of drives. When you start with a baby, it's a total crapshoot. So
that's
lucky.
Absolutely. But, absolutely. Even though you get a dog from good lineage, it doesn't mean, it doesn't always mean it's going to be a good work dog.
So out the door, Oklahoma City bombing, I think, was a first for this country in terms of the magnitude and that type of, I don't remember anything else like that bombing, you know, prior to that, taking down the whole face of a large building. Certainly you train your dogs on rubble, but you really can't fully prepare for something of that magnitude. So how was that going in as a newly certified team with Bella?
Well, I actually, with the FEMA, you go in waves. So I did not go out in the first wave. I went in the second wave about 10 days later. And even though I was assigned, I was actually part of Los Angeles City Fire Department FEMA team, I went with Orange County FEMA team because at that time, there were only like 15 certified disaster dogs in the country.
Right. It was not, it was not a well-known thing.
No. So we went there and we knew most likely it was going to be recovery. And a little bit about the Oklahoma City bombing, there was, let me think a little bit here. There were, I think, 162 people that were 168 people that died. And the fatalities occurred primarily among the victims in the collapse zone of the federal building. Only 83 survivors that were required long-term hospitalization and mainly had fractures. But most of the victims actually self-evacuated and drove themselves to the emergency rooms.
Okay.
And within within the first hour, 50 people were pulled from the rubble. And this was mainly just the local fire department or volunteers.
Yeah,
because no FEMA was on at that time.
Yeah.
And the last survivor was a 15-year-old girl that was at the base of the collapsed building, and she was pulled out at 7 p.m. that day. So that was a lot of, that's a big saying on what's happening now in Florida, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But it was a big, it was something that I've of course never seen before, but it was, and I don't know if I'm jumping the subject here or not, I'm sorry, but it was nothing compared to 9/11.
Right. But
so but Bella did well. Yeah. I mean, she was one of the few ones that had both live find and cadaver certifications, and she found four of the last remaining bodies that were in the building before they imploded it.
How did you acclimate her? I mean, I've been to rubble piles. They're not. I mean, first of all, the whole FEMA dog training thing was not well established.
Right.
FEMA didn't have really a certification for cadaver. And did you even have the infrastructure for the dogs that you have today at that time in terms of decon and vets on staff and at the ready to help them? Or was it just kind of, hey, we've got vets here to help?
They didn't have vets on staff. One night, the only thing she had, she was given some fluids one night. I remember that. And of course, people always say all those booties that people always want to
send.
No. and it just, I mean, people, yes, we appreciate it. And the booties just don't work that well on the rubble because the dogs don't feel the rubble underneath their feet. And also through their feet is another way that they cool themselves. We do use a booty sometimes if the dogs are injured, and because a lot of these high drive dogs, hell, they'll work if they have stitches on them somewhere. It doesn't stop them as long as they could still walk. The dogs, I don't think they really know the difference, Sonia. It's us that have to play it cool and let them know that it's okay, that they're doing a good job.
Right. And of course, it's not like training. That's
right.
You said, a couple of hours, we go, we have fun. You have a lot of success. Everybody's
right.
happy.
Yeah.
Nobody's stressed. We pick a good time of day that's not going to be 110 degrees for them. And
that's right.
And set them
that's
up right. for a lot of success. So how did you work through that, especially as a younger, newer dog?
She, we will take people from our task force or from the FEMA task force and hide them. But we always let the other people know that this is to reward the dog for her hard efforts of looking for live people during the day. And we will put live people behind something and send the dog to go find that person. And that person who was placed there will then reward the dog with their toy.
Which gives them context, it rejuvenates,
and confidence that there really are live people here.
Yeah.
I'm not just looking at nothing.
Yeah. And so I think you and I both agree, there's always been talk of, and I call it a myth, that, oh, the dogs get depressed, so they need to find somebody. What are your thoughts?
Nah.
Exactly.
I think they get confused. I wouldn't say depressed. It's confusion, because when we're training, they're almost always finding people. However, a good team captain will set up trainings where your dog's not finding anybody. And I love to do that sometime, because the dog handler will think, heck, what the heck's happening? What's wrong with my dog today? Why aren't you finding anybody? It's because there's nobody out there.
Yeah. And that's a good, and the other thing, I think you probably come as an advantage. You're a professional rescuer. You are used to dealing under stress. You're seeing people in their most, you know, dire, urgent situation. So you're not going to fall apart. And if you don't fall apart, your dog's not going to fall apart.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I actually found what got to me more in Oklahoma, because the security was not as good there as it was at 9/11. But you had these people coming up to you with a picture of their loved one and say, please, this is my mom. Can your dog please find my mom? And then it breaks the barrier that you have of this protective barrier that you have of keep the personal stuff away, let my dog do her job, let my dog and me do our jobs. And that's what would get to me. That's what would get to me. And I remember when I was in, so my learning thing from Oklahoma and then going to 9/11, when I was at 9/11, I didn't watch hardly any news. I brought my books, I brought my music to listen to, but I wouldn't look at the newspaper. And then at some time, I remember seeing a lot of my task force or some other task forces looking at all those faces on that wall of all those people missing. And I said to them, don't do that. Yeah. You know, do it when you come home. It's still going to be there, but don't do it while you're here, because it pulls on your heartstring. I mean, some people I know don't have much of a heart, but with me, it would pull on the heartstrings. So I try to keep things upbeat. And we, of course, did the same thing at 9/11 with the rubble, hiding people that we place there to give the dogs build up their confidence and build up their there may be people here. So we would do that often with the dogs on the rubble piles.
Yeah, and also I think maybe you can. My understanding is that the FEMA handlers are a mixture of civilians and fire, are they not?
That is correct. And I know personally one, she was a great handler from Oklahoma City, was not police or fire or whatever. And she had a great little border collie. And after that, she couldn't do it anymore. I guess they have no idea how traumatic it is and how for the average civilian, they don't see the horrors and they don't see the trauma and the drama and things like that a first responder would see. So it's a real eye-opening for them.
Well, I think I've said this before. I think that anybody who gets into search and rescue says, oh, I'm going to go find the Boy Scout that wandered away from camp and my dog gets to be a hero and it's all going to be happy. And then when we get into it, then we realize what the job actually can be and what it is. And obviously, I'm someone who's been to a bunch of crime scenes. You know, there's a lot of stuff you see behind closed doors that you can't see when you're driving through a neighborhood. So clearly a darker side of life. And certainly as a paramedic, you're going into probably hoarder homes and people who are not cared for, and then homicide scenes and all kinds of different things. So we do get a little bit desensitized and learn to compartmentalize. It's not a lack of caring. It's an ability to compartmentalize the mission versus
yes.
How you feel about it. So
yes.
Certainly I think you as a handler would have been far better equipped to deal with it than someone who said, oh, I want to have a search and rescue dog and save people.
Correct.
Right?
That's correct.
So when we had talked earlier, sort of turning to the Miami situation, the Surfside condominium. So what can you tell us about sort of collapse structure and what you've learned through your experience and your training with FEMA and the fire department and being an inspector, fire inspector?
Right.
What can you tell us about sort of this pancaking kind of building behavior?
Okay. So I'm, of course, not a building engineer, whatever. I can't even build a deck of cards like a card house. Yeah. Those always fall down. Anyhow, The survivability of people in pancake structures are voids, V-O-I-D, like a void area. I know at the Northridge Meadows, I think it was only a three-story building that collapsed. They had the people that were found there were people who rolled off their beds because they knew about creating a void and the higher probability of being found alive if you're with a void. Or another one, I believe he was in this kitchen and his refrigerator fell down, so he laid down next to the refrigerator. And another one with like a big filing cabinet. So those were just a few people that were alive that were pulled from the rubble. The other ones who were found deceased were almost all in their beds, and the pancake came down and smashed them on the bed, you know, where they were sleeping. And even with that, the earthquake at least you had some warning. I was here in Simi Valley when I heard it. I thought a train was coming through my house. I'd never heard anything like that.
And just for reference, so the Northridge earthquake is Los Angeles County, California, and Simi Valley is how far from Northridge?
Where you probably how far from? Yeah, 15 miles.
Okay.
15 miles.
And it was a five or what was the level? Do you remember?
Oh, I think it was higher. I think it was six something.
Okay.
And of course, it was the time of the day that saved a lot of people, because when I drove around after, and I was going to work that morning. I remember I stayed home for a couple hours to help get things cleaned up. And then I went to work that morning, and I did bring Bella with me because I didn't know if maybe we would go out anywhere, but she was not certified in FEMA at that time, but she was in cadaver. So anyhow, when I came home and I drove around a couple places, I remember the Kaiser building, the medical office, and at the mall, I believe it was a Broadway or a Bullocks or something, but that completely was collapsed. Now, thank goodness it was 2 o'clock in the morning with the Northridge earthquake, because there would have been, if it was in the afternoon or midday or something, or early evening, there would have been a lot more fatalities with those other two buildings that came down.
Yeah. So in terms of this particular deployment, my understanding is that it's a couple of Florida task forces and Virginia is going to be filling in. Others are going to rotate in. What do you think, how do you think they're handling the shifts for the dogs? Obviously the dogs are not on the pile for a full 12 hours. So how do you think they're sort of rotating that through?
I'm not 100% sure, but probably, I mean, when I've worked my dogs, and we did Hurricane Katrina also, not with Bella, but with her grandson Ranger. You would work your dog for, and a lot of it depends upon everything. It depends upon the humidity. You have a dog that comes from Washington that is nice, cool weather all the time, and throw them to Florida where the humidity is crazy, you really have to watch your dog a lot more than normal, because that's going to bring the dog down more than it going opposite way. Like a dog with humidity going to where it's cold, the dog would probably say, yeah, it's nice and cool here. So you have to watch your dog. Yeah. And it might be only 10 minutes. It might be only 10 minutes on the pile, but they have to, yeah, I think there's a lot of confusion. And I understand, I really do, because the people want to find their loved ones, but heck, we can't risk the lives of the FEMA teams, people or dogs, and of course, more really people. They have to make sure it's secure. And they're going from, I know, underneath and up above. But we can't, I mean, that's another thing with us, with the paramedics. The main thing is you and your partner. You don't become part of the issue. If you don't go into a shooting, you're going to become victims yourselves. You don't want to become victims yourselves. So we have to protect our teams, because we're there to help out. We're not there to become another part of the tragedy that's unfortunately happened.
Well, even I was an EMT for 10 years, and you start every exercise with, the scene is safe. Well,
yes,
clearly this is not a safe scene.
Right, right.
But you still have to go.
Yes, absolutely.
With some level of caution.
Yes, you do have to go.
Right.
That is correct. That is absolutely correct. But we, that is correct. Maybe it kind of sounded wrong.
No, you're absolutely right. Looking at it, my first thought was, oh God, what if the other side comes down? Or what if
yes,
the whole thing
absolutely.
Drops again
absolutely.
And you've got 100 people on that pile? You've just magnified it. But
absolutely.
At some point, even, you know, I was at La Conchita, you were there. And at one point they pulled us off because they had geologists there
correct.
Saying it was still sliding. So that was the mudslide
right.
in Ventura.
Yeah.
And,
that's
and
right.
you sort of weigh those risks, I guess. And but it's definitely, and looking at that pile, it's hard to fathom how you even approach it. I mean, they're trying to burrow in from underneath. They're going at it from on the top. Obviously the dogs are going to get probably the odor above. I don't know. It's just such a monumental task. And
it is. And unfortunately it's going to, I think, be more of a recovery eventually than a rescue.
Pretty soon.
And the rescue, of course, is when you're pulling out live people. And the recovery is when you're pulling out the deceased. And you look at it, I mean, just when I got to 9/11 with my FEMA team, and I'm looking at that, and I'm saying the probability of anyone ever being found alive here is probably nil, because and now again, this is different from the Florida, but in New York, I didn't see. I mean, when I was, let me back up this slightly. When I was in Oklahoma, I saw stuff between the pancakes. I saw furniture.
Saw places.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I saw furniture. I saw computers. I saw that. But at 9/11, it was just nothing.
Dust.
It was just powder and dust. So that was a huge difference. I think this Florida thing is kind of between Northridge. I mean, what I've talked about a little bit, between Northridge and the Oklahoma City bombing. It gives them more void spots. But, and I'm sorry, I'm not quite sure. How many stories high is the Florida?
I think
15?
It's 12. I think it's 12.
12, okay. So if there are people who may be alive, I would think it would probably be more people on the bottom floors that were trapped between in some void area. I can't imagine someone from the 10th or 12th story falling in and surviving that.
Yeah, it's just, it's so, all of these disaster type things, they're so oddly unpredictable, but predictable, right? So there's always that random thing that doesn't make sense. Well, how old was Bella when she went to Oklahoma versus, I mean?
Oh, she was only about 2.5 at Oklahoma. And then, maybe 3, I guess closer to 3, 3.5. And then about 9 when she went to 9/11.
And yeah. She survived cancer in between, right?
She did. She had sarcoma, spindle cell sarcoma, went through, and that was in the early, September 11th. So that, I think she had it in June of that year, June and July. And she was off, out of commission for a couple months because she was having radiation. And then the week or a couple weeks after she came back and was fully able to go back, she actually found Megan Barroso, who was the one who was the last victim of the Simi Valley rapist here where I live. And the guy had thrown her body over the side of a hill here in Simi leading up to Rocketdyne. And she found her body there. And then that was in August. And then here we head off to 9/11 in the next month.
Wow. how, when you were at the World Trade Center, it has to be overwhelming for the handlers, for everybody, right? And so
it was.
And very physically unpleasant with all the right, physically challenging.
It was physically challenging, and knock on wood, did you hear that?
Yeah.
I was one of the few ones, even on our task force, who whenever I was out there, I wore some type of mask over my face. Whether it was just a simple mask or the more breathing mask where you actually have the bigger filters. And thank goodness because we do have tests about every year or so, the 9/11 study, and my lungs are good. Thank God.
Yeah.
So
when I was at the Pentagon, we had those, but I tended to pull it down. Obviously it wasn't nearly as thick as, because my dog is looking at 40 people in white Tyvek all wearing masks and I'm trying to communicate with him. I'm like, I can't tell him anything. Not that he wouldn't know it's me, but I'm like, how can I?
Well, but I think the probability of finding live people at the Pentagon was probably higher than the
Oh, I wasn't there. I was centers. There for recovery, though. I was there for recovery.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
It wasn't. And actually, again, by the time FEMA gets there, it's, even if it's 18 hours later, which is a fast deployment, most people that were rescued are out in the first hour.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. The self-rescue or they're calling for help and they, yep. There's only been, I mean, the only real rescue that I know, was it Haiti? I think it was Haiti where those girls were found several days later. Yes. They're under the mattresses or something, but yes, that was an amazing find.
And there have been some in Turkey and there have been some, you know, randomly around.
Yes, random. And I even remember in 1985, the Mexico City earthquake, I remember them pulling a baby that was in a incubator or something, that pretty much a newborn baby that was found at the hospital.
Wow.
They found him several days later.
Well, that's kind of why when I first saw this Surfside condo, I sort of held out hope because it wasn't a bombing. You know, World Trade Center is a bombing and Oklahoma is a bombing. And you know, the Pentagon was a plane that blew it up. But I sort of held out hope because this is sort of a collapse, which is, it's almost like an earthquake, right? That the ground went out from under it. So it collapsed.
And yes.
It seems to me like but maybe because of the height of the building, there's less probability.
I think because the height of the building and that they did not have any warning, like an earthquake, you have some warning to try to find a safe spot. But even if that building had collapsed down in an earthquake, I don't know if people would have had time. I mean, since it pancakes so much, I can't imagine them be able to, you know, hold on to the mattress or something while they completely collapse down to those floors.
And then maybe something else you can share is, as a paramedic, I remember hearing something about, you know, if someone's leg is compressed, you can't just...
Yes. Okay. So they can't, because that's called compression. So I think it's compression syndrome, and a lot of times they can't lift this stuff off because all those toxins that are in the leg or arm or wherever will go back into the system and put them into shock, septic shock.
Okay.
And I know they have to sometimes, I know it sounds horrible, but they have to actually amputate without giving me anesthesia also.
Awesome.
Because they're going to be, because they could throw them into hypovolemic shock because they're going to be losing so much blood. Mm-hmm. So ideally, They should have a IV started somewhere on their body before they amputate the leg, but I know, or the appendage, but sometimes they have to amputate it without any anesthesia. I just can't imagine that. But
ugh, it's a heavy topic, to be sure.
But it is.
Any other dog moments, memorable moments that you're like, you know, that just made me so proud, and I just wish that because as gruesome as all of this is, as handlers, we're there, and our dogs are doing what we've worked so hard to get them.
It is,
and well, it's almost a high five moment, but you can't because it's so sad.
There's sometimes some funny things, and this doesn't happen to do with any disaster. This happens to be is one of the tests I took with Bella once. And this is when we had the three piles instead of just two piles. And one pile was a long, big oblong pile. And she was on the other side, and because I sent her up and over, she went on the other side, and I'm trying to look where she is. And I pretty much checked everywhere on that pile except underneath the pile. So I come up and over the pile, and she's like sitting over by my car, like, "Mom, I'm telling you, there's nobody, no other victims on that pile. If you want to keep looking at it, you go
ahead.
Do it
on your own time."
Yeah, I'm just going to sit over here by the car and tell you there's nobody else. So that was a humorous moment. And although, you know, and dogs, how they know, we experienced dog handlers know how much we could shut them down by our feelings, sometimes our verbiage. And when I went after the Oklahoma City bombing, I went back a couple times, the first year, and I think then the 5 years, I went back for the memorial services. And on the first year, there were a couple of the people who were there who had lost loved ones. And we were in a big circle talking. And one lady, I had never even met her, but she, you know, was crying and whatever. And Bella left my side and went over to that lady.
Oh.
And I didn't even tell her, but she went over to that lady and put her head on her knee. And I was trying to tell you, I couldn't believe so many people started crying, like, oh my gosh, this dog, you know, they really, really know your feelings.
Well, aside from the fact, all I ever remember of Bella is that little rectangular red toy that she'd throw at my feet and back up and stop.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So for her to take time to leave your side to go and comfort someone says a lot, because that wasn't really probably what she wanted to do, but she did it.
No. And I was saying, and I was going to say something, and another funny thing with her, how we could shut them down. Now, the one thing I wasn't that crazy about Bella, and this really the only one thing, was she was sensitive. And I think some border collies are more that way. But I had to watch myself. But with the, if you're going back to the FEMA test where you have the pallets that are at the bases. So I was doing the CASDA,
California Swiss kind of version. Dog Association version.
Yes, yeah, the Swiss Dog Association version one. So I was just trying it out. And at the pitcher, instead of pitcher spot, which is normally a platform, they have a circle. They put a circle of a fire hose or a hose, whatever. And you had to stop your dog in that hose, in that circle. And so I think we went out to first base first, and then I'm trying to get her to that middle circle. And she stepped into the circle, and then I told her, whatever, you sit or whatever. She's looking at me like, what the hell? Yeah, I'm supposed to go over there to the base. And at that time, it was more, if your dog went on another platform, it was a fail. Right. It's not quite as hard now. But so I had to stop her before she went to the third base. I try to get her back to the circle. So I send her back over to the right. She gets in the circle again, and I say, Bella, down. And she looks at me like, what the hell is the matter with you? She goes back, but she's trying to go back to first base. And
I'm supposed to be on something, and you are messing it up.
So I send her back to the left to go into that circle. She gets to that hose. She goes completely around it, and then the other side. And we all started laughing, but I'm thinking, that dog was thinking, Mom, when I get in that circle, you become a real bitch.
You created avoidance. Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm just going to avoid that area because I don't like your personality when I get in that circle.
Well, I think what humans fail to realize is when dogs don't do things, it's because we haven't taught them what they're supposed to do.
It's never because
they're making up their own mind to be defiant. I mean, I did have one that was pretty defiant, but she would literally look at me and I'd tell her to go left and she'd look left and then she'd say, yeah, no, I'm going right. That was Bear Bear. So
I remember Bear Bear.
Bear had her little stubborn streak. So there are those that say, yeah, no, not doing that. But
yep, there are some
girls. She was so willing. She would have done anything you asked her if she understood what you were asking and it didn't make sense. So
Right. That's funny. But yeah. So to continue on real quick with the dogs I've had, and I'll just make this quick. So after Bella, I had Ranger, who was one of her grandsons, and Charlotte, a granddaughter. Right. So Ranger was a Disaster Search Dog Foundation dog, and Charlotte was not. So Charlotte did HR, and Ranger did Live Fine. We did the Lacachita mudslides with him, Hurricane Katrina, and Rita, and Gustav and Ike, but the only one we really worked at was Katrina. The only earthquake we worked at. I mean,
flood, hurricane, yeah. Hurricane,
hurricane, hurricane. So, and then of course we worked the Lacachita mudslides. And then after those two, I tried a couple dogs and they were not making it. So I got Huck, a Labrador from the Search Dog Foundation. Now I'm not much of a Labrador person, but he was a good guy. He was like a good old country boy. And he was actually assigned to a guy back in Oklahoma for 3 or 4 years. And that guy could not get him to pass the FEMA test. So I asked the foundation, I said, you know, I'm not deployable. Do you have any dogs? And they paired me up with Huck. The first day I brought Huck home and I bring him in the house, he is counter surfing. Now I'm saying, what the heck? We don't do that here. But he just needed a firmer handler. And within 3.5 months, I had him certified.
Perfect.
But he was a crazy dog. And we never went on anything with him, unfortunately. And then I have Xena, Belgian Malinois, who does Live Find, and Uma, a Dutchie, that does cadaver. We have not gone on anything yet. I mean, I have gone on searches with the sheriff, but nothing, no disasters yet.
Yeah. Well, and there was a period of time, I guess it was sort of pre 9/11, there were disaster dog handlers that had never been deployed because
every
disaster dog goes on a deployment either. So
absolutely.
Great people, great
absolutely.
Dogs, training like crazy, certified yin
yep.
yang,
yep.
never got a deployment.
Yep.
But now with global warming and climate change, and I think there's a lot more of it. I just don't know.
Yeah.
It's going crazy.
And a lot of people, and I know, well, you probably don't see it quite as much as we do in the FEMA field, where people, you know, they'll see that, oh, I want to become a search dog handler and this and that. I want to do FEMA. And I always try to direct them first to their local sheriff, because there you'll get some calls most likely in the dog's career.
Yep.
Yeah. And I don't know how much more time you have, but I want to relay a real funny story with Huck. He's my first and only Labrador I've ever had. I never realized what pigs they were. Absolute pig. But what I did get complimented on, though, was how well I knew the dog. So on his first test at three and a half months after I got him, and I think he was like 6 years old already at that time, or maybe seven. And it was a limited access test. And the wind, I remember, was blowing 40 miles an hour. And away from me. So we're up by Magic Mountain at a place called Del Val. And I sent him to find somebody. He found somebody. He barked, bark, bark. I went up there and found the person. And he had actually missed another victim that was right behind me, but that was right over the edge. So I really had envisioned that the search, the other people were out farther
beyond you know, yeah.
beyond me.
Yeah.
So, and again, now I only had about 3.5 months, so we didn't have a complete connection now. So, I send him out and he looks back at me and I'm thinking, I know he's smelling food, but I don't want to say leave it just in case it's a victim.
Right.
So I just told him search again. And he kind of, okay, here I go. And he goes into this tunnel and this concrete, like you use for plumbing, you know, like in the street.
Yeah.
And I tell you, I could not get him out. I tried the hardest. So finally, one of the handlers, the evaluators, hey, Teresa, try to get the Huck out of there. So I was calling and whistle. And of course, the wind was blowing towards me, so he couldn't hear. So I'm coming out, and he finally comes out of the tube, licking his chops.
What had they put in there?
Well, so anyhow, I said to the evaluator, I'm going to presume Huck not only found, but also consumed some of the distraction, because of course we have to put food on the and toys and sometimes freshly worn clothing on the pile when we test them, because that's things you're going to find in a real search, and sometimes live animals, so in a cage. So anyhow, we did the other's pile and he was fine, and then so the evaluator came afterwards and said, you may want to check Huck's poop the next couple of days. I said, what did he get into? He said, it's not that he got into it. He said, how he did it. He said he moved like 30 pounds of rubble and broke through plywood, and he ate a compliments of El Pollo Loco, a chicken breast, a whole bean burrito, and a pint of rice.
Oh,
and and I said, well, no wonder he was licking his chops, because he was pissed that there were no churros for dessert.
Well, yeah, I think the lesson of that is, they're miracles, but they're still dogs. At the end of the day,
that's it.
Dogs,
they're
right?
Still dogs.
And they just don't quite know that the weight of the world is on their shoulders. And as handlers,
yeah, that's
dogs,
right.
Let them not know that the weight of the world is on their shoulders, right?
That's right. That's right.
Any words of wisdom that you'd like to share with people?
I give my hearts to everyone out there doing it, because I know firsthand how much dedication it is. And if you're looking to get into this for the glory of it, that ain't where your heart is. It needs to be that you like to help people, and that's why you're doing it. Not because, oh, look at me, I'm on TV, or look at me, I'm, you know, this and that. It's because you have a passion for helping people and working with dogs.
Yeah. And just to kind of add to that, you know, these are the big scenes that we hear about. We, you know, Oklahoma,
right.
World Trade Center, Pentagon, whatever.
Right.
For the person who's missing someone, it's no more or less important the person that wandered out in their backyard and.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I
absolutely.
Think that's, a, you know, absolutely. This is, it's duration. It's so many people. It's just, it's a horror scene. But at the same time, loss is loss. And you know, like you say, seeking out the glory and the seeing your dog on Time Magazine or whatever is not really where the motivation should be. It should be on the
correct.
So
correct.
Anyway, well, I thank you so much for your insights and sharing with us this evening.
You're welcome, Sonia. We've been friends for a long time.
I know. Well, I met you. I got to California on a Friday, I believe it was April 15th of 96. And I went to my first CARTA training on April 17th of 96. And you were there.
Ah,
so that's
very good.
I didn't waste any time. And I had called you before I moved to California to say, wait a second,
right.
I'm coming.
And I remember that.
I had my little fresh bear. And then
yep, that's true.
I stupidly spent 2 years beating my head against the wall with the wrong dog before I got the right one.
But that's just
that way.
That's how we learn. And you know, and that's the beauty though of having valuable people like you and me and many others that have gone down that road and say, nope, it ain't going to work with this dog.
Yeah.
It's time to find another one. And people that get into search and rescue, and mainly more with a sheriff type, not maybe the FEMA as much.
Right.
But they have to take our experience of telling that person, hey, I'm sorry, but your dog's not going to work out. And either you, I mean, you're welcome to come and help us and be, you know, a victim for our team, but don't bring your dog anymore because it's wasting our time.
Right.
And our time is way too valuable. We spend way too much time doing this. And hopefully, you know, a lot of times we can help them find a dog.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, when you get the right dog, how easy it is.
Oh my gosh.
It's so
beautiful.
Right. Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's such a beautiful dance.
Yeah, you beat your head against
it's a beautiful dance. Yep, yep.
And then you get the right one and it's like, oh, well, that's how it's supposed to be. It's just a steady one.
Yep, that's how it's supposed to be.
And it's pretty nice. So anyway, well, heart definitely goes out to the folks, not only
absolutely
ones, but yeah, those that are working it and what they have to deal with and how exhausted I'm sure they all are. And it's a struggle for the entire community, I'm sure. But hopefully people will get answers that they need, if not get their loved ones back. So
that's right. And may I mention something not completely due to this training, but I know you have a wonderful training business and I have a little bit of a one.
I didn't ask you about that. Yeah.
Don't worry at all, Sonia, please, you know, don't worry at all. So I have, mine's called Bella's Canine Babies because Bella, the Border Collie, always loved any type of baby, whether they were kittens, chickies, baby goats. She was a mother to all these babies. But my business, I try to help people. And I'll use a nicer word than I a lot of times use when I explain it to other people, pretty much not how to screw up your dog because puppies are these, I mean, for the pet, I think a puppy is great because they are these little balls of clay that you could mold into what you want them. And there's such a critical period between 8 and 12 weeks where that puppy needs to be socialized with other animals, other dogs that are of a calm manner. They have to learn basic manners. Now, I'm not saying a lot of obedience because that comes a little later because puppies don't have a lot of attention span at first. But people don't realize that the work that really should be done when they're really young, the housebreaking, the crate training, I fight people all the time about crate training and how wonderful crate training is for people. But anyhow, that's my little side business. And I help people with the puppies and I'm not into it nearly as much as you are. But
no, but I'll put a link on my show notes so that people can get a hold of you.
But right? It's actually building up. I almost finished one class and then I have a new class coming. So, and I love the nose work too. That's fun. But
You're teaching nose work now too, right?
I teach nose work. Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So I'll put a link to your website on.
Very good. I appreciate that.
And anybody who's living in the California area and wants to get together with Dorisa, and or anybody who ultimately ends up in the disaster field will probably meet Dorisa anyway. But yeah, I'll have Dorisa's contact information and her website. And I'm sure you have many, many other stories, but for today, this will be it.
Okay. Well, thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
Nice
so talk, much.
Chatting with you.
I appreciate it. Well, that's it for this 11th episode of Canine Top Tales. I certainly appreciate everybody listening, and thoughts and prayers go out to all those who have lost loved ones, who are waiting for news on their loved ones, and certainly the best to the rescuers, and thank you for their great work. It's a difficult, difficult search, and I hope that they can get some resolution and hopefully have some success. So thanks all. Stay safe.